We are in the book of Proverbs. We are going to attempt to work our way through this interesting little book. I wouldn't say little book, challenging book, because it addresses a subject that many of us are in short supply of, and that is wisdom. We are in Proverbs 4 tonight, and I would like for us, my plan is, unless we get bogged down, and you know how you guys are, we get to discussing stuff and y'all mess me up. You know, I normally get through on time. It's all your fault when we don't. Let's take a look at this entire chapter. Let's read through it and see if we can get through this tonight. Proverbs 4, beginning in verse 1. Hear, ye children, the instruction of a father, and attend to no understanding, for I will give you good doctrine. Forsake ye not my law, for I was my father's son, tender and only beloved in the sight of my mother. He taught me also, and said unto me, Let thine heart retain my words, keep my commandments, and live. Get wisdom, get understanding. Forget it not, neither decline from the words of my mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve thee. Love her, and she shall keep thee. Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. And with all thy getting, get understanding. Exalt her, and she shall promote thee. She shall bring thee to honor when thou dost embrace her. She shall give to thine head an ornament of grace, a crown of glory shall she deliver to thee. Hear, O my son, and receive my sayings, and the years of thy life shall be many. I have taught thee in the way of wisdom. I have led thee in right paths. When thou goest, thy steps shall not be straitened, and when thou runnest, thou shalt not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction. Let her not go. Keep her, for she is thy life. Enter not into the path of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it, and pass away. For they sleep not, except they have done mischief. And their sleep is taken away, unless they cause someone to fall. For they eat the bread of wickedness, and drink the wine of violence. But the path of the just is like the shining light that shineth more and more unto the perfect day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They know not at what they stumble. My Lord, attend to my words. Incline thine ear unto my sayings. Let them not depart from thine ears. Keep them in the midst of thine heart. For they are life unto those that find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Put away from thee a froward mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. Let thine eyes look right on, and thine eyelids look straight before thee. Ponder the path of thy feet, and let all thy ways be established. Turn not to the right hand nor to the left. Remove thy foot from evil. Well, here we are in the midst of this long parable extolling wisdom. We began, you remember, back in chapter 1, the first six verses is like a preface to the book. It is the author telling you why he's writing the book. That's generally what happens in a preface. What's the book about? What's the need for it? That kind of thing. And then starting in chapter 1, verse 7, and running all the way down to the end of chapter 9, is this long parable that extols the virtue of wisdom. Now, let me ask you, what have you learned about wisdom so far? Let me ask an easier question. What is wisdom? The skillful application of knowledge. Gold star, Robert. Or as my Russian professor used to say, red star. Okay. Always worried about him a little bit. Anyway, the skillful use of knowledge. Can you have a lot of knowledge and not be wise? Absolutely. Can you have a little knowledge and yet be wise? Absolutely. In other words, what we're talking about is the skill at using the knowledge that you have. Now, can you learn wisdom instantly? I gave you a number of illustrations over the last couple of weeks of things that just don't lend themselves to be learned instantly. Can you sort of regurgitate some of that? Or maybe you've thought of some others besides what I've given you. An athlete. Going to learn, who was it? Little Ella learning how to play tennis. You go and you take tennis lessons. You just don't turn into a tennis champ instantaneously, right? What else? Piano. How many of you have taken piano for years and years? And I'm looking at Elizabeth here. How many years did you take piano? Seven. Just seven. She's still learning. Well, and that's the thing. You never get to the end, do you? You just keep learning. And that was one of the things we said about wisdom early, is wisdom is not something that you say, okay, I got it. Remember back in the preface, the author said, this is something that is going to take you a lifetime to grasp. So learning an instrument, how to play. Tony, what were you going to say? Teaching your children how to drive. Yes, it's an acquired skill. It's a skill. You can read a book all you want. You got to get out there and do it. The old saying is wisdom is making good choices. How do you learn wisdom? Making bad choices. That's a lot of it. It's experience and it takes time. It's like another thing I gave you was the idea of a foreign language. By its very nature, you can't learn it instantaneously. I guess God gives you the gift of tongues. He doesn't seem to be going to ever give me that. But outside of that, it takes time. It takes, and therefore, the themes that we keep seeing floating up in this discussion about wisdom is the idea of discipline. And discipline, we're accustomed to thinking of your father taking you out behind the woodshed, at least in my day, and getting a good whipping. Discipline is a far broader, pregnant term than that. It means the whole notion of training. And that's what's involved. For instance, in learning a foreign language, you keep going over and over and over stuff. Barbie teaching kids how to swim. Why do you do all this back and forth? I mean, it's just back and forth. The scenery never changes every lap of the pool. But that's what's involved. You are training so that things become automatic. Playing an instrument, as many of you know, if you have to think about it, you're sunk. You've got to practice to the point that you don't even have to think about it. Your fingers just automatically go where you want. Now, that's the idea of what we're talking about, and that's why wisdom mocks at those who wouldn't listen to her. We saw that, and I'm saying, is wisdom mean? No. But the very nature of wisdom is not something you can instantaneously just give you a load of. It's the whole process. It's putting yourself under the discipline that brings about the acquiring of wisdom. Now, again, another mistake we make is to think that wisdom is just about the right answer. Wisdom is not you getting the right answer. Wisdom is the process that allows you to come to the right answer. I can give you, I was talking about in our old math books back in grade school, back in the dark ages, where some of them had the answers in the back of the book. Well, you can get the answer. And sometimes kids could come up with the answer to a math problem, but they have no clue why this is the right answer. How did you arrive at the answer? I don't know. I plugged in, the teacher gave me a formula, and I plugged in the variables, and here's the answer. Well, that's an answer, but that's not wisdom. Wisdom is knowing the whole scheme. How did you arrive at this? Okay, well, I'm going to get off my soapbox. Just trying to keep these things fresh in your mind. Did you notice, and we have been now for a couple of chapters, dealing with like a parent speaking to a son. And in the two chapters previous to this, it's more like the admonition of a mother to a son. But tonight, notice very clearly, as we get into chapter 4, it is, hear you children or you sons, the instruction of a father. So it is now the father talking to his son about how he needs to pursue this lovely girl. Did you notice how wisdom is always spoken of in the feminine through here? Get her. Again, that's because in Hebrew and in Greek, the word for wisdom is a feminine word. You know, we don't associate that in English, but that's the way it works in those languages. So it's very natural to think of wisdom. If you're going to personify wisdom, you personify her as a her or a she. And so notice the whole insinuation here is, son, you better grab this girl. You better chase her. You better pursue her. Let us look at how this starts. The first 13 verses, we're dealing with this father having this little conversation to his son. In verse 2, he's telling me, I'm going to give you the good stuff. In other words, the father is not out to destroy the son, right? The father is out to instruct and to improve the son. And notice in verse 3 and 4, the very interesting thing here, the father says, once I was the son, once I was in your shoes, and I was the one getting this instruction. Notice verse 4, he, my father, taught me also and said, let your heart retain my words and keep my commandments. In other words, what the father is now passing down to his son is what was once passed down to him by his father. Now, what does that tell you about wisdom? What's that? It can be passed down. It's learned. I'm fishing for something here, and y'all are obviously, yes, Camille? I'm sorry? Other people, older people, oh, I like your thinking. Yes, they came here, but they've got wisdom now. There is a sense in which we assume that an older person is a wiser person than the young person. Remember that part of lack of wisdom comes from inexperience, and the younger person has not been around the block quite as many times as the older person. In other words, we're having to listen. Don't have to be older. No, there's young people with wisdom. Yeah. There are some things you don't want to experience firsthand, like what happens in a wreck with no seatbelt on. You'd just soon learn that from somebody else rather than yourself. Yeah, I'll get you there. Janet, you were waving. Well, y'all are going in a completely different direction than my mind was working. And what this was saying to me, when the father, here's the guy instructing his son and saying, once I was in your shoes, I was getting this taught to me, is the point that wisdom is timeless. Wisdom is a timeless commodity that is never obsolete. Knowledge becomes obsolete. And we see that, don't we, in our world today. The ability, I was thinking, I saw a guy come by the down Goodman Road the other day. He fixes TVs. And I'm thinking, my, I didn't know there's anybody around that fixes TVs anymore, because it's almost a disposable commodity. You know, in every little town back when I was a kid, you had some guy there that worked on TVs. You know, you take them in there and he figures out which tube is burnt out and replaces it and gets it going again. Who does that today? That's almost an obsolete bit of knowledge. I'm thinking the fellow who makes harnesses for the buggies. There was a time that was an important skill. To know how to do that was really important, but that's passé. There's just not too many of those guys around. You don't need them. Every town when I was a kid had a blacksmith. Out in the farming community, every town had a blacksmith that knew how to work with metal. I wouldn't have a clue where to go to find a blacksmith today. I'm sure there's got to be somebody out here, but every little town has something like that. Do you understand what I'm saying? And we're in a revolution of knowledge. Knowledge, to know how to work your phone today. In 3 years, that phone's a piece of junk, and you're getting a new one, and everything you knew about it's out the window. You understand what I'm saying? Knowledge is just passing and coming and going. Wisdom is timeless. In other words, what the Bible is defining as wisdom. Wisdom that starts with the fear of God. Looking at the world through a Christian grid, Christian mindset, or paradigm that is never, ever going to go out of style. You're not going to have to worry about that becoming obsolete. And that's what this was saying to me. Let me go on, or we're never going to make it. This is rather interesting. Look at verse 5. Get wisdom, get understanding. Verse 7. Wisdom is the principal thing. Now, what do we mean by principal thing? The main thing. It has a little flavor in the Hebrew. It means it's the first thing. And when we say it's the first thing, we may mean it's the first in importance, main thing, or we may mean it's the first in priority, the first in time. It's the first thing. Some of the modern translations, anybody have a NIV here? What does it read, Jody? That's verse 7, that first phrase. Wisdom is the what? Supreme. That wasn't the translation I was looking for. Oh, John? The beginning of wisdom is this, get wisdom. In other words, you're saying, what's the first step I can take to be wise? Get wisdom. It's the principal thing. It is the first thing out of the chute. In other words, the first step in becoming wise is to realize that the first thing I need is wisdom. Now, that's a rather strange way of putting it. That's what I was looking for. And that's saying the same thing as the King James here, but putting it in a little bit more, shall we say, catchy phrase. The main thing is, about wisdom is get it. Don't miss it. Get it. Make sure with all you're getting, he says, that you get understanding. Make sure that you're going to spend your life getting stuff. I'm not talking about the measles, hopefully, but I'm talking about acquiring things, acquiring possessions, acquiring a family, kids, acquiring stuff. I mean, that's what you spend your life doing. You're getting stuff. And he said, with all you're getting, make sure you get this. This is first and foremost. This is the most important thing that you can possibly get. Get wisdom. All right, let's go a little further. Verse 6 and then 8 and 9. Notice that there is a reason why we ought to seek wisdom is because of the gifts or the favor that wisdom brings with it. Notice that wisdom preserves. Solomon in Ecclesiastes talks about a city being besieged and an old wise man with his wisdom delivering the city. In other words, this guy goes out and negotiates and is able to divert this army that's laying siege to the city. Do you remember the story of Sheba? His wife, the Queen of Sheba. No, it's another Sheba. Sheba is this guy that rebelled. When David, after he had defeated Absalom, comes back across the Jordan River, this guy Sheba says, we don't want any part of this guy. All you that are for Saul and me, follow me. So a rebellion takes place. And Joab takes David's army and chases this guy. You talk about chasing a guy out of Dodge. Chases him all the way to the extreme northern frontier of Israel, to this little town called Abel Beth Maaca. And Joab gets the army together, and it's a walled city, so they're laying up siege mounds, and they're getting ready to storm the walls. And this old lady sticks her head over the wall and says, "Hey, what's going on here, Joab? Why are you trying to destroy a mother in Israel, you know?" And she said, "We're reasonable people. In the old days, they said that when we want to settle a dispute, let's go up to Abel Beth Maaca. We got wise people up there. They can help us settle this thing. So we're reasonable people. Why are you just up here destroying us?" And Joab says, "No, wait a minute. You don't get it. There's this guy named Sheba that's rebelled against the king, and he's holed up inside your city." And she says, "Oh, wait just a minute." And a few minutes later, guess what? Here comes Sheba's head flying over the wall. Situation solved. You know, that's the wise woman of Abel Beth Maaca. There's problem? There's no problem. Here comes his head. Well, that's the idea that wisdom preserves you. Wisdom promotes you. With wisdom, he says, comes promotion. You want to know how to get promoted? Seek wisdom. With wisdom comes great reward. He talks about she's going to bring you in verse 9, your head, an ornament of grace, a crown of glory. This Stephanus, this wreath, like the victor's wreath, and then a diadem, a crown on your head. So wisdom is to be sought for many reasons, but she has a pretty good dowry. Y'all know the concept of a dowry. We were in Mexico, and right as Jessica and Eric were getting ready to get married. And Jessica was in there. We were talking to Dan, and they had a gal from Usila that was washing the dishes. And Dan asked this girl, this down one of these Indian villages, said, what's the going rate for a dowry, for a bride? And this girl said, 5 chickens. And he said, yeah, but what if it was Jessica? And she said, 1 pig. So in other words, keep in mind that with this girl, you're going to get something. And notice what he's saying. With this girl named Wisdom comes all these other things, promotion, wealth, riches. It's a pretty good deal. So make sure you get her. And then notice verse 10 through 13 just elaborates on this, is to make sure I like verse 13. Take fast hold of instruction and don't let her go. Keep her. Hold on to her, for she is your life. Don't let her slip away. Seek her. Lay hold of her, because she is thy life. That's an interesting expression. She's the one who's going to make your life worth living. All right, so there we have his counsel. And now notice in verses 14 through 19, we have a contrast between two ways, two paths. And the first thing I notice is how common an illustration this idea is. Certainly not the only place in Scripture. I put up here Psalm 1. Anybody know how Psalm 1? Blessed is the man who walks not like these folks. He's blessed. Cursed man is this, the guy that walks this way. And then in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 7, we have Jesus talking about a narrow way and a broad way. Same type of deal. The broad way leading to destruction, the narrow way leading to life. If we think of the narrow and broad way under the terms the true way and the false way, which certainly you can think of it that way, you begin to see why the true way is a narrow way. Because it's like, how many, if I say 1 plus 1 equals, how many wrong answers can you give me? A jillion wrong answers. How many right answers can you give me? Just one. You understand that truth by its very nature is very narrow, very rigid, very inflexible. Truth doesn't bend. Error, on the other hand, is very broad, very everything embrace. You see that in our culture today? Throwing out anything that would be rigid, narrow. In other words, anybody like you, we're narrow-minded Yeah, you know what I mean. We're just narrow-minded bigots, you know. That if you hold to truth, you become rigid because you can't be otherwise. But error, on the other hand, is very broad, very forgiving, all-inclusive, all-embracing. And so here we see again this illustration that there are two ways to go. And this is, again, the instruction to the son. Let's take a look at it. Notice the thing he says about the evil way. Down in verse 16 is they can't sleep. They can't go to sleep unless they've done it. It's like a fix that the wicked man has to have. The drug addict, Charlie, y'all gonna be up there in Pontiac, and I hope you have some discussion with some of the folks up there that are at the recovery part of this thing, getting over crack and heroin and all this stuff. And I tell you what, it is so enlightening to understand the grip that these things have on folks, the addictive nature of these things. And certain people certainly have an addictive personality, and they have to be extremely careful about what they allow themselves to do, because they can just fall head over heels for it. But notice the description here of this, the wicked, is that verse 16, they don't sleep until they've done it. They've got to have their fix. And then not only do they do it, but it says their sleep is taken away unless they cause some to fall. That's not talking about, it's talking about making somebody else do wicked. Again, John, the SV here, how does it read? Unless they have made someone stumble. You begin to see, we are getting a glimpse at that in our culture, that the perversion of truth is not just that, well, you guys do your thing and we'll do our thing. But there's a militancy with evil. that it's not content just to do it itself. It's got to make sure you do it too. It's not content to just say, okay, I'll do my thing and you do your thing, but it's evangelistic, if you can twist evangelism. It wants to make converts out of folks, right? I mean, we're getting a huge dose of that right now with this gay agenda thing. It's not enough to just leave it alone. No. You've got to embrace it. It's a militancy involved, and that's what's being spoken of here. The evil way is not content until it converts others. And then the contrast is the way of the just, he said, is like a light which brightens in the full day. I was thinking about that expression. It's down there in verse 18. It's like a shining light that shines more and more and more. In other words, the more the just man walks this way of light, the lighter it gets. And I'm not talking about lighter in the sense of less heavy, but brighter and brighter and brighter. Bunyan in Pilgrim's Progress, when evangelist comes and finds Christian, you know, he's searching for the know what. He says, this is a city of destruction. And evangelist tells him, well, you need to find this wicked gate and go through that. And he said, well, where is it? And he says, do you see that light over there? And Christian says, I think so. Bunyan was very astute. Hey. In other words, I think I do. He said, well, then head to that light. In other words, head for light, and as you go towards the light, more light is given. The more you embrace the light, the more light the light shines. And notice how that is opposite the evil man's nature. Why the lost men love darkness? Because their deeds are evil. They're not pursuing the light. They don't come to the light. That's, you know, again, a misperception. If we can just get the light out there, all these lost people are going to flock to it. No more than the bugs under a 2x4 out in your yard flock to the light. When you pull that board up, they head all underground. They love darkness. But notice the man who is in pursuit of light, the more light he gets, the more light he goes towards, the more light comes from it. Am I making sense? Do you understand that the more we pursue truth, the more truth we're given to pursue? And just, I think that's the expression, grace for grace. We're given grace, then he gives more grace, just keeps piling it on. All right, so we have, and notice this last little statement about the way of the wicked in verse 19. It's like darkness, he says. They know not at what they stumble. The man in, and again, boy, what a different culture this was. You know, when the sun went down, it got dark. And work ceased, because you can't see. Travel ceased. You can't see. Today in our culture with the electric light bulb, everything changed and nothing slows down. We go 24 hours a day and we don't worry about it. But in the ancient world, it's a very different situation, and that's the sort of the cultural mindset that the scripture is using here, that the fellow who's walking in darkness doesn't see where he's going and he doesn't see his danger. He doesn't see. He's in darkness. He doesn't grasp, he's ignorant of the destruction that awaits him. So he's cocky, he's assured, but he's walking in darkness and he never sees the trap. He never sees the edge of the cliff he's about to walk off of. Okay? Alright, let's try to wrap this up. Wisdom, verse 20 through 27, the last part, the father goes back talking to his son, and he's saying, what I picked up on here, he says, heed my words and my sayings, and that wisdom is objective. It's not how you feel about something, but there is an objective message. You can put it in words, okay? And that's very different from, our culture today. We want to feel this and feel that. What do you think about this and so forth? But this is a very objective thing. This wisdom is being expressed to you in sayings, in propositions that you can understand. And then note in the close here what I call the holistic approach to spiritual health. Now, some of you are familiar with holistic medicine. What do we mean? Natural healing, okay? Part of holistic medicine is that. But it's generally more than that. Looking at the whole man. In other words, this is taking the whole picture. And by when we say the whole man, what do we mean? Okay, but yeah, practically. If you go to Janet, you're dealing with the whole, in other words, more than just the physical symptoms. I'm not sold on the approach, but Cancer Centers of America, you see their advertisements all the time, and they're saying, you know, in addition to all of these cutting-edge technology, we use massage and aromatherapy and diet and so forth. But it is that approach that there's more to the healing of the person than just treating the outward symptom, that we want to treat the inward man as well as the outward man. Well, this is what's going to end this chapter with this instruction to this son, is that I want the whole of you to heed what I'm saying. I want you to see, first of all, guard the heart. Unfortunately, this text has been hijacked by the, instead of dating, courtship. Yeah, the courtship group have hijacked this verse and made it their motto that you're not supposed to let yourself become romantically involved except with the person that becomes your husband, which is absolutely foreign from what the text means and in the context. What the text is saying is that it is, keep in mind, first of all, in the Bible, the word heart is not used most of the time in a romantic sense, nor is it even used as the seat of the emotions. But it's a word that speaks of the inward man, especially your mind. For instance, as a man thinks in his heart, so he is. Well, wait a minute. Well, I'm supposed to feel in my heart. No. In biblical terminology, you think in your heart. It's the mental process. In other words, the heart is simply being used to express the inward life as opposed to the outward life. And so what this text is saying is that, first of all, you want to pay particular attention to your heart. What's going on in your heart? What's going on in your mind? What's going on in the inward person? Because out of it flow all the issues of life. John, again, let me just go back to the well here at the ESV and see how it expresses that. That's verse 23. From it flows the springs of life. That's sort of a double entendre. Flows the springs. Springs flow. You don't flow a spring. Anyway, I don't particularly like that. Anyway, Jody, what has yours? You have an NIV? 23? Ah, that's better. It is the wellspring of life. In other words, it's like the idea that your heart is like a fountain. And what comes out of that fountain? If you do realize that a lot of times in ancient warfare, they would go and poison springs so that the water that comes out is poisoned. And what he's saying is, above everything else, guard your heart. Keep your heart pure. Keep your heart clean, because out of it flows everything else. Secondly, notice, guard your mouth. Oops, that's a toughie. He says, put away from thee a froward or perverted mouth, and perverse lips put far from thee. Guard your lips. Some of us ought to gag our why? In other words, notice how we're working our way outward, because from the heart, from the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. And so we have taken a step now from the inner to the outward. And we're saying that, first of all, we begin to verbalize if we have to be careful what comes out of our mouth. Let me go on and finish this up. And then guard your eyes. I didn't notice we have Jordan here, a military man tonight. Jordan, good to see you back home. Do you ever do this marching in the
where you are? Are they real big into marching? You do parade stuff. Do they do the eyes right, the eyes left? They do that. All right. Well, in this case, the order is eyes straight ahead. Notice how it's put here. Let your eyes look right on. Let thine eyelids look straight before thee. What's that saying? In other words, here's the road that you're supposed to be on. Don't look to the left. Don't look to the right. Why not? Why can't I gaze and enjoy the scenery? You tend to go where you look. I do. I even, when I'm out walking, let alone driving, you don't even want to go there. But I'm out walking, and I get distracted by something. Next thing I know, I'm walking out in the ditch. We tend to go in the direction we look. And notice there is the right path. Keep your eye on it. Don't let yourself look around and wonder about all these other paths. And then finally, guard your steps, your feet. Notice verse 26, ponder the path of your feet. Don't turn to the right hand nor to the left. Remove your foot from evil. So do you see what I mean here? The holistic approach, that the whole man is being exhorted from inside to out to pursue this right path, the way of the just. Billy? Walking circumspectly. That's what... Yeah. Those of us who grew up on a farm, we understand that. Yeah, walking carefully. Walk carefully through the field. Yes, ma'am, Jody? Take only ways that are firm. Now, that's interesting. I didn't notice that translation. In other words, the idea is there are certain paths that you're going to get bogged down. Make sure you're on firm ground, straight paths. Okay, well, there you have it. Again, wisdom. You notice we're going to be all the way to chapter 9 before we really get down to the nuts and bolts about what wisdom actually is. All we're doing right now is just talking about how important it is. We're sort of setting the stage that notice when your father says, there's this girl over here, and boy, you better get her. Don't let her slip out of your grasp. Make sure you get her, because, man, you get her, you got a prize. He hadn't told you anything yet about... Well, she cross-eyed, blonde hair, hadn't really got down to the specifics yet. But boy, he's sure making her sound good, right? And that's what is happening here in this parable, is that we really hadn't gotten down to the nuts and bolts about, okay, what is this wisdom? We're just talking about how important it is, because the first thing you need to know is you need it. It's like the prologue to a book. You're right. It's a song. It's a song right at the beginning of the book. In praise of wisdom, you could call this proverb that.